there is this branch of transpersonal psychology, which you have been associated with it to some extent. I have seen your name in the journal's advisory board. It used to be, but not anymore.
Yeah.
How do you feel about transpersonal psychology? Do you think that it is possible to have an academic discipline which will be able to talk about religion in a scientific, academic manner?
Boy, that's a delicate question. Finally, these academicians must turn the light back in on themselves. And finally, how much they're going to find out is how deeply they have done their own inner work. And the problem is that as long as you keep the traditional Western metaphor of science, it is still studying something out there. Even though we now are sophisticated enough to say that the experimenter enters into the experiment, you know, we haven't gotten to the point where you start to manipulate the experimenter in order to change the perceptual viewpoint. And that's really what transpersonal psychology's got to struggle with. And most of the people that are in transpersonal psychology do not work very hard on themselves. They use the language of the East and of the mystic tradition, and they are trying to deal with these issues, but they are primarily defining themselves as social scientists, not as students of God or as inner working people. It's a delicate one, because there are some that are doing that, but generally, that's what's required.
Yes, I completely agree with you. I mean, it really has to be that scientists got to start meditating.
Exactly.
And whatever comes
down
up.
To, yes. That's the bottom line of the whole game, yes.
Now, in meditation, the problem that scientists do, again, you know, Western, in the sense of being a Western scientist, it's really, from the outset, doesn't seem to be a very difficult proposition. Not even a very taking too much time type proposition. I mean, after all, I have seen physicists doing one experiment for 10 years.
Yeah.
He can do that. And and why shouldn't he be able to meditate for 10 years and see what happens? But yet, there's tremendous reluctance.
Well, because it's always, meditation has always been seen by the West as that kind of mushy, mystical domain. And it's interesting because if you take, for example, the Theravadan Buddhist tradition and the Tripitaka and the basic texts of the Theravadan tradition and the Vedantic traditions and Vedic prescriptions, you see an exquisitely articulated psychology of the human mind that we in the West don't have anything compared to it in terms of the subtlety. I mean, The Vasuddhimagga of Southern Buddhism is one of the most exquisite maps of the human thinking process that I've ever seen. And we don't have anything remotely as sophisticated as that.
That's right. This just has not been studied.
And once one approaches meditation in that kind of systematic way of understanding that through meditation you can change the point from which you are perceiving time and space to the point where you can stand behind your own thought forms and watch the thoughts appear, exist, and disappear, which is extraordinary. Like, the Buddha describes the last 34 mind moments before he goes into nirvana. All right? Those mind moments are happening at the rate of about 1 trillion per blink of an eye, is the rough estimate. And yet he's describing 34 of them discreetly, one by one. Now, how could he do that if he didn't get outside of time so that the minutiae, the microsystem, he could spread it out and look at each one discreetly? We can't conceive of that because of our identification with our thinking process.
Yes, and also the identification occurs in sometimes very articulate manner. You know, we are talking about this going out of time, and ultimately it boils down to going out of the body, going out in a way which is called transcendence.
Yeah.
And if you look at the human mind from the artificial intelligence point of view, which a lot of very intelligent people are doing, you know, the computer model of human being. In the computer model, of course, it's all a delusion that you go out or you transcend.
Of course. Of course.
There is an example which has been given in one of the books, which is of the Escher picture, where a dragon is trying to go out of a page, and it makes a hole and it goes out and comes back into a hole. Yet anybody who looks at the dragon's picture knows that the dragon is not getting anywhere.
Exquisite.
It's a delusion.
It's beautiful.
So
yeah.
They say, well, that's what happens to people who talk about transcendence. You're not really going anywhere, but you're just deluding.
Sure, that's exactly, for example, Freud. I used to teach Freud, and Freud said all religion and spiritual concerns are merely sublimated sexuality. They're merely displaced sexuality. And you can see, like within the chakra system, that every chakra has its own reality. And that you try to explain some phenomenon that's associated with another chakra, you reduce it to within that chakra system or that subsystem to explain.
So you are stuck with the phenomena that you start with, because your method of studying.
You only see yourself out there. You only see yourself. You never, so you got to change yourself to see something else.
That's right.
And that's what the Western scientist isn't quite ready to buy yet. Because we are attached to our senses and our thinking mind, and those are the attachments that ultimately stop the process.
Mm-hmm.
We are attached to those as our vehicles for knowing. And we have to let go of those vehicles. And we yet haven't got the respect for what is other than that, which we might call awareness or Atman or whatever you want to call it, you know.
What my hope is that if we could make some scientific, quote-unquote, advancement in the process by which transcendence takes place. I say process because if what happens in transcendence is something that you can only be, but the process can be studied. For example, there is some neurochemical, neuropharmacological studies, which has now been able to differentiate between the meditative processes versus the processes that happen in drug experience. For example, in under LSD, what happens is that the brain becomes hyper aroused because of some neurochemicals.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah.
And in meditation, on the other hand, the brain is hypo-aroused because of, again, a neurochemical.
Well, all the shifts in, like, alpha rhythms, the increase in alpha and things like that with meditation, all the EEG, all of it raises some interesting issues about whether these are correlates, which is always the issue about measurement, whether these are correlates of the phenomenon or these are the phenomenon, because I really am not very impressed with the fact that the brain has much to do with the higher meditative state.
I have no doubt that these are correlates. But let me raise an interesting question, because you are one of the people who have experience with meditation as well as the drug.
Mm.
Now, the brain goes to two very different processes. That is, when you meditate, you slow down the mind to some extent. Whereas when you are into drug experience, then the mind is actually acting very fast.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps this is an approach of the consciousness or ultimate consciousness that we talk about in two different ways.
Yeah.
And there is actually one suggestion. A man named Roland Fisher, I think, has actually suggested that a rupture can take place from samadhi into this state of tremendous hyperarousal.
Uh-huh.
And another man has come very close to it, and I'll just add to it and say it, that is the process of raising the kundalini. Now, in your experience, when you have described it, I think in Only Dance There Is, that suddenly your breath disappeared and you felt energetic. Now, this process, does that even remotely correspond to going from a state of tranquility into a tremendously aroused state?
It certainly could. It's interesting. Most of the... are you measuring the arousal in biochemical terms or in electrical potential terms in the brain or what?
In both terms.
See, because the subjective psychological experience with psychotropic, with chemicals that alter consciousness, like LSD, is a speeding up of thought process in the initial stages until it gets to a point where it breaks. There's a discontinuous moment, and then you enter into a space in which it's a cosmic awareness, in which there's no thought anymore. In the early stages, which is might be what's measured most of the time, there is an agitation until you break out of, it's a breaking out of something.
And you have felt that break. I
mean, yes.
That break
was I've felt that discontinuity every time that has happened. It gets very subtle, but I can still experience it.